should've learned to row and ride. Wearing my six-shooter, riding my pony on a cattle drive.
Well, good morning and welcome to the show. Evan Bray, great to have you with us today on another full day of Agribition, and we are broadcasting live from Agribition. We are at the Saskatchewan Cattle Association booth, so invite you to pop by if you are down here today at any given time. It's a busy day today, American Thanksgiving, so if you're a person that likes American football, maybe you're going to skip out of work early this afternoon. I don't know. Lots of football on TV. And, of course, today is the day we see, hear, and find out the details of this pipeline MOU, which should be coming down a little bit later on this morning. We got a full show for you today. Mid-year financials out for the province. So we talked about this yesterday. It was originally expected to be a $12 million surplus, so razor thin. Now we've got over $400 million in the deficit. We heard from Saskatchewan Minister of Finance Jim Ryder yesterday. Today we will have Carla Beck, NDP leader, joining us just after 9 to give us her thoughts on the province's financial picture. Because we're live at Agribition, we've got some guests from the show popping by today. I mentioned we're at the Saskatchewan Cattle Association booth, so we'll talk with one of the board members from the Saskatchewan Cattle Association about the health of the beef industry. Also, one of the leaders from Sask Ag Matters and the Canadian Pro Rodeo Association will be joining us on the show today. Have you seen the show Ice Road Truckers? It's on the History Channel. It's a good show. It chronicles the trucking in Canada's north, which can be precarious across those ice roads across the lakes in the wintertime. We've got a Saskatchewan trucker featured on season 12. Sean Harris from Prince Albert will join us on our program today, and then we'll have a little discussion about your dangerous drive experiences. And, of course, we've got topical discussions happening. I mentioned the pipeline deal. $10 a day daycare is going to be approved by the government tomorrow. That and a whole lot more coming up on the program. But let's get going with today's big talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, tonight at the University of Regina, a highly anticipated public talk by a significant Canadian political commentator. You know the name Andrew Coyne. You've probably read his byline before. Longtime contributing columnist at the Globe and Mail. He's a political analyst, talks government policy, public life. It's earned him a reputation for both insight and candor, and over the years he's written on a variety of topics, interprovincial relations, constitutional issues, the shifting landscape of Canadian democracy, which, by the way, is part of his recent book, The Crisis of Canadian Democracy. And I am happy to be able to connect with Andrew Coyne prior to his speech tonight. Andrew joins us by phone. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the call.
Good morning, Evan. Nice to be with you.
Is Regina a place you've visited much in your life, Andrew?
I can't say much, but I would say probably 5 or 6 times.
Well, you're going to see an abundance of cowboy hats in the city of Regina today. We've got the big farm show Agribition going on here all week long. So, you know, don't let that skew. Don't let that make you mistake for being in Alberta. You're in the right place.
Good thing.
So I want to talk a bit about your presentation tonight, but maybe before we get to that, your book, the newest book that you've written, The Crisis of Canadian Democracy, is an interesting read to me. Can you talk a little bit about where the idea of this book came from and your thoughts on the crisis that is Canadian democracy?
Sure. I mean, I've been writing about, you know, different aspects of this over the years, but I went to lunch with my editor and publisher and longtime friend Ken White, and he was the one who suggested, why don't you pull it all together into sort of a comprehensive portrait. And I guess that's maybe the contribution of the book. People have written books about each aspect of it, but I think when you see it all laid out as the degree to which all of our institutions are in advanced state of disrepair, whether you're talking about the role of MPs versus the party leaders, whether you're talking about the ability of Parliament or lack of ability to hold governments to account, whether you're talking about the role of the Prime Minister and how everything is basically devolved into the office of the Prime Minister, Cabinet itself has become more or less meaningless. It's basically pretty comprehensive, even extending on to how we hold our elections, the fact that we continue to elect parliaments that look nothing like what we voted for because of the distortions in our electoral system. It's a pretty comprehensive portrait. And I guess trying to persuade people that this is more than just business as usual. It hasn't always been this way. It's actually worse now than it was in the past. It's worse than it is in other countries. I try to go to some extent to show in detailed form how we've actually got a much more advanced state of disrepair than other countries do. And to try to wake people up, because the problem is people are so used to Parliament being irrelevant that they can't remember why they should care about it. So, for example, in the first part of this year, when we're in the middle of this existential crisis over Donald Trump threatening to annex us, Parliament sits dark for 5 or 6 months and nobody cares.
It's really fascinating to me when you talk about this, and obviously running a talk radio program, we hear from listeners and get opinions. It feels to me like Canadians are more attuned to politics, good and bad, that comes with politics today than ever before. My wife and I will sit at the table and talk about interprovincial barriers, trade barriers. That's not something that we would normally talk about. Do you see this recent cause for engagement as a good thing, Andrew?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think we still have a healthier political culture here than some other places, particularly looking south of the border. I think there's still an ability to talk to each other. People aren't hived off into quite such enemy camps the way they are in the States. I think there's more respect for authority and expertise here than in the United States. But it's a precious thing, and it can easily dissipate. And one of the things I would argue is our institutions, things like Parliament, things like the cabinet, government, et cetera, these are what help cement that culture, keep that culture in place. If we let the institutions go, we'll see weakening of the culture soon afterwards. So the two things are interrelated.
Andrew Coyne is my guest, Canadian political and economic journalist, author, Globe and Mail columnist. Sometimes I was just talking with a friend of mine the other day, Andrew, and I said it feels like we're playing whack-a-mole on federal issues, whether it's foreign interference, defense spending, enhancements, trade relationships, nation building. What do you think the priority should be? Have we hit on the priority right now, or do we need to try and do all things at all times?
Well, it is a bit of whack-a-mole, and I think what we're facing is a bunch of things have kind of come up that have been kind of bubbling along that we've been kind of ignoring or half-dealing with have all kind of come together at the same time. And part of what's accelerated that has been the reemergence of Donald Trump south of the border. It, when your, you know, longtime best friend, largest trading partner, closest ally, historic protector, the country that guaranteed our defense, when the president of that country and large sections of that country have kind of gone squirrely on you and no longer view you as an ally or friend, then everything else gets upset. So we're having to rethink our defense policy. We're having to rethink our trade policy. We're having to think about how we're going to defend our own territory, which for 150 years we haven't really had to think about because whoever tried to invade us or mess with us would have to mess with the Americans. So, you know, all these things are coming together, and underpinning it all, I would say, is the productivity crisis. The fact that our economy is almost slowed to a halt, and not just in a short-term sense, but the long-term growth rate of our economy now is so slow. And if we're going to generate the revenues that we need to pay for all this increased defense spending, to pay for the aging population, the healthcare costs, we have to, I guess the number one priority has to be, we've got to get our economy growing constantly on a faster basis, long-term faster growth rate, because that's the only way we're going to be able to pay for these things.
We're chatting with Andrew Coyne today from the Globe and Mail. Speaking of the Globe, I've got an article here I printed out from earlier this week, 29 Ways Trump Has Changed Canada. It's an interesting article, and you look at, I mean, there are 29 really good arguments that can be articulated as to how Canada has changed as a result of Donald Trump. You could argue right down to the outcome of the last federal election. The book's not being written yet, but your thoughts on, at the end of this, will the changes to Canada be better or worse as a result of Donald Trump's presidency?
We don't know. Hopefully better. It's certainly putting enormous strain on our trade policy. How do you plan for the situation is if you're a business person, where the president of the United States, your nearest and largest trading partner, just on a whim, might wake up in the morning and slap a 50% tariff on you. There's nothing in the history books, there's nothing in the economics textbooks that can prepare you for that. So, you know, what does not kill you makes you stronger, you hope.
Right.
It certainly is going to mean that we're going to have to have a much more resilient economy. We're going to have to diversify our trade relations more than we have historically. That's hard to do. The gravitational pull of the U.S. economy is pretty hard to overcome. But certainly if it spurs us to focus on this productivity question, I think that's to the good. We need a kind of an escape velocity, if you will, that where our economy can continue to grow at a good clip, even in the face of these headwinds from Trump's uncertainty, from as I say, not knowing which industry is going to get slapped with a tariff tomorrow. The only cautionary note I would say is, as bad as his behavior is now, it's only going to get worse. He's on a kind of a spiral of some kind, and his behavior has been getting constantly worse and constantly more erratic. And hang on to your hats, because it's going to get worse.
Andrew Coyne is my guest, Globe and Mail columnist, speaking tonight at the university. So the talk that is entitled tonight, "We'll Miss the Legacy Media When It's Gone," brackets, "Though It's Not Going Anywhere." Talk about the conversation you're going to have tonight.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of gloom and doom in the media in particular. And I think a lot of people might have got hold of the idea that, well, the media is on the way out. We're not going to have a legacy media or traditional media, mass media anymore. I don't think that's the case. I think what we're going through is a transition. We're changing from one business model, which was based on advertising finance. The advertisers have mostly left us, although I see radio seems to be still doing pretty well. But those of us in the print trade are learning to live without a lot of the advertisers that we had in the past. So we're moving to a reader pay or a viewer pay model. That's tough. It means you have to actually offer people their money's worth. But it ultimately, I think it promises a stronger and more durable future for us if we can get through this transition. We need the media because we're never been in an age of more disinformation and frankly craziness from social media, and it's messing with everybody's mind. So we need these outposts of places that are actually practicing the craft of journalism, trying their best to you know, state the facts squarely as they see them. But we shouldn't make the mistake, I guess would be my third point, of thinking, well, therefore we need to subsidize the media. And I think this has been a terrible blind alley we've gone down. It's not necessary. We're mostly the authors of our own misfortune. We need to fix our own problems. I really worry about the damage to our reputation for independence, and indeed the degree to which we'll start to identify with state-heavy policies because we're all basically receiving public money. I think that's really worrisome. But mostly what I worry is it takes the heat off to us to innovate and experiment and figure out how to you know, develop a new business model and assure our own long-term future. When you're taking the government money, basically the message is go back to sleep. You don't have to worry. So
right.
That's the three-cornered message that I'm putting out.
It's going to be a great talk tonight. Before I let you go, Andrew, we're waiting for a pipeline announcement today. Many people pointing out that maybe the easiest position in this pipeline is what Prime Minister Mark Carney has to do, because he signs an MOU but doesn't get the ball over the finish line. That's going to be up to the premiers to negotiate. How do you see this playing out when there's clearly a fracture between, if we just look at Alberta premiers, Danielle Smith and BC's Premier David Eby?
Yeah, I mean, pipelines, interprovincial pipelines, are squarely a federal responsibility. Ultimately, it is the federal government's call. That doesn't mean he has to approve anything. He's got a lot of different concerns he's got to address, environmental, economic, et cetera, and interprovincial unity, if you will. But ultimately, that has to be his call, and I think the pipeline proponents are within their rights to say, look, it's one thing just to say, I'm not going to get in the way, but are you going to put some political capital on the line to try to push it through, to push it over the goal line, right, as you say? And as you say, so far, I understand the difficulties he's in. He's got a caucus that's very divided on this. He's going to be worried about losing seats in British Columbia. But ultimately, that's why you get the big job, is to make those decisions. And, mm-hmm. and unless and until he puts the federal government's authority behind it, I don't think it's going to get done. Now, does that mean you just simply say my way or the highway and you order it, or is there room for negotiation with British Columbia? That's the statecraft part of this.
Andrew, I've loved having you on the program. I hope we can get you back again sometime soon.
Very good. Nice talking to you.
Andrew Coyne, Canadian political and economic journalist, author, Globe and Mail columnist. He's speaking tonight at the University of Regina. It'll be a packed house there, talking about legacy media and how this transformation in how legacy media works to inform, along with, of course, the new influence of social media, pay for news sites, those types of things as well. Also, his new book, as I mentioned, is out, The Crisis of Canadian Democracy, and you can check that out at your local bookstore. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back live from Agribition. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.